Hello, and welcome back to the 100 Pockets podcast. We've been on hiatus for a while, to say the least. My name is Kurt Stein. With me is...
Lucas James Lorbecki.
The bearded wonder.
Bearded.
And we didn't realize people were actually listening to the podcast, mainly because we hadn't been tracking it, and secondly, because nobody ever emailed us. So, again, I want to put out there that this podcast is brought to you by 100 Pockets Records. We've got some exciting stuff going on this year. Some cool releases coming out. You're going to hear a track by Ari Chersky called Not All Cowboys Wear Hats. His album's coming out in December. And if you like spaghetti westerns, if you like Bill Frisell, Mark Ribot, things along those lines, you're going to dig this trio. It's just... upright bass, drums, and Ari on guitar. Good stuff. Good stuff. We hope you like it. But anyway, we're back with the podcast. Today, we're going to be playing an interview I did for Fever Pitch Magazine. Again, this is the Lost Fever Pitch Tapes, a now defunct magazine and record label I used to work for in the early thousands, mid-thousands. And this is an interview I did with Andrew Alexander in January of 2005. Now, a lot of people have no clue who Andrew Alexander is, but he's the man behind Second City. So, you know, he's kind of in charge of all the Second Cities, and Lorne Michaels comes to him for Saturday Night Live cast and everything like that, and everyone from Gilda Radner and Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray and...
Up to Tina Fey.
You know, John Candy, Chris Farley have all come through there. And so you're going to hear a really interesting interview I did with him about kind of how Second City works, a little bit about the film and comedy industry, and some interesting stories. So we hope you dig it. It's quite listenable, and he kicks down some knowledge and about the industry that I don't think a lot of people have heard or thought about. So this is kind of a behind the scenes thing. We hope you enjoy it. We'll be back in a little bit. Andrew Alexander, ladies and gentlemen.
This interview, I really appreciate it.
No problem.
First kind of thing I wanted to ask you is, I know there's been a lot of buzz on the internet and stuff about why it took so long for Second City to finally come out on DVD. I heard everything from just you weren't ready, clearing music rights. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was the primary reason that we were, for a long time, it was very difficult to find a company that would take on the risk of getting all the music resolved. And, you know, Shout ultimately was the company that, you know, took on that responsibility. But that was the primary reason.
So when you guys were doing the show, you were just blatantly grabbing whatever you could?
Well, back in the 70s and early 80s, you know, there wasn't synchronization issues, really weren't much of a concern. It was starting in the mid to late 80s that, you know, the publishers began to, you know, become alerted to, you know, that there was a profit opportunity. And so a lot of shows got hit with the same thing, and a lot of shows actually, you know, don't get cleared properly, so they don't come out. But yeah, back in those days, yeah, you hear a Beatles scene, you say, that would be good. Let's try that. Are you on the line, Stacey? Or she maybe disappeared. Because, you know, they... yeah, it was like nobody knew about it, and it didn't really exist, so we did that, you know, and paid the price.
Unfortunately. Can you tell me a little bit about your background and how you got involved with Second City and that kind of stuff?
Sure. I kind of founded the Second City in Canada in 1973 and opened up a small location in a fire hall in Toronto. And my first cast was Gilda Radner, Dan Aykroyd, John Candy, Joe Flaherty, Eugene Levy, and Gilda. And then in 1975, Lorne Michaels started Saturday Night Live, and, you know, Danny and Belushi and, you know, went to, didn't there was a bit of a short-term period where they were had left Second City, but they, you know, got hired at SNL. Mm-hmm. That kind of became the, you know, the hot new wave of comedy, and I kind of, and I was just sort of starting out with Second City, and I felt, oh my gosh, that there's a very good opportunity here that I'm going to lose a great cast, you know, and my business will fold. So, you know, that really inspired us to start our own television show, which was really the, you know, we got an order for doing 7 for a local TV station in Canada, Toronto. And, you know, 7 became 13, and, you know, we just kept doing it. And actually, 8 years later, you know, we amassed a fairly large library.
Is your background in theater or in business or in...
You know, I was I would say in my 20s, I didn't have anything nailed down. I didn't do... I dropped out of college, you know, in my second year of business. And, you know, was right doing everything from driving a cab to running a speakeasy to working in a small theater. And it really wasn't until, you know, that I was able to... I started doing some marketing, though, for a theater in Toronto, and I did, I guess, a pretty good job of it. And they, I got a job offer in Chicago, which got me turned on to Second City. And that's how I ended up, you know, becoming an associate with Second City, and I moved back to Toronto.
Can you tell me a little bit about the philosophy of Second City when you got started out and kind of where it's at now, both as in a performance place and as a TV show and everything else that's involved with it?
Yeah, I mean, very simply, I mean, Second City actually started in 1959, you know, and it was from a group of intellectuals that were out of the University of Chicago, and Bernie Salins and Howard Alk, and they, you know, really were... started the first improvisational company, and you know, people like Asner and L.A. May, Mike Nichols, people like that, Joan Rivers, you know, Alan Arkin, involved in those early years. And really, the process and the what the work is about hasn't changed much since those days in 1959. It's ensemble work, and you know, the we have a sort of a regular part of the show, what we call the book part of the show, but and then we have an improvisational set. That improvisational set is how you're always developing material for the next show. Mm-hmm. And it's all ensemble. So that philosophy of ensemble is definitely carried over to the television show. All those people, you know, had worked together in an ensemble environment. And I, you know, it really is one of the foundations of why it was such a success, is because they, you know, all understood the kind of work process that they'd done on stage together and took that work ethic and process to the television show.
You've known everybody who's kind of in the last 25, 30 years who's really made an impact, a serious impact in comedy. What was it like to see a lot of those people coming up, like Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray, and especially like John Candy?
Well, yeah, it's the people and the institution have definitely had an influence over, you know, the style and kind of comedy that we've been seeing 25, 30 years. And, you know, they all, as individuals, you know, obviously had a different unique style, but they all kind of come, their roots were this kind of work. And seeing Bill Murray, I guess, today, you know, really branch out into more dramatic fare and, you know, as an actor is, but I think, you know, there was an interesting article in Time Magazine last week with Bill, and then, you know, how he referenced Second City a lot in terms of his sort of foundation of you know, learning to become an actor and, you know, kind of an ensemble actor. And I think it reflects in his kind of work. He's a good example of a current actor that's really doing a lot of great work. But, you know, all those stars, I mean, they were all, you know, pretty extraordinary. And, you know, I think it was the freedom of the kind of work you can do at Second City, where you can really have a point of view and reflect it. You can do good character work, develop great characters, And I think it's still the place that, you know, Lorne Michaels still comes to when he's looking for good talent.
Yeah.
Tina Fey is probably the most current example of that. Adam McKay, who directed, you know, the most, you know, recent Will Ferrell movie, Anchorman, he directed and wrote that picture.
Do you, when you guys are grooming new people, is it pretty free to let them develop as they see fit? I mean, is that a, it seems like a pretty loose operation. Like, you guys have really worked out a good game plan as how to help people develop their own stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all about the experience at Second City is that the ability to fail is encouraged. You know, and like I said, there's two parts of the show. One where you're seeing polished sketches that are finished up, and there's the improvisation part of the show, and that's where you know, they'll try anything, and that's where, you know, we encourage failure because that's where they really learn. And, you know, they get, you know, they'll give them the freedom to try anything pretty well. And I think that, you know, that's the key to the success of Second City and why so many Second City performers end up doing well, because they're ultimately become pretty fearless once you've, you know, gone out in front of 300 people excuse me, every night and, you know, had a chance to fail every night and get some things work and some things don't. And after 2 or 3 years of that, you get pretty good.
I've actually been into your career personally for a while. I tend to like guys who have a very entrepreneurial instinct and can really promote the arts in a new way. I mean, I started this magazine. We're a magazine. Fever Pitch is a magazine, record label, and now a film company as well. And we have our own sketch improv group. We have a ton of different things going on. And I was wondering what you thought about the industry, say 30 years ago, the entertainment industry, compared to today, as how breaking in, it seems it's a lot harder now, and you have to really work the independent route.
Yeah, I have about 2 points of view on it. I think one is, I am not a big fan of vertical integration. I think it's been, you know, I think we're all seeing the damage of that, and, you know, and look at the news media is probably one place to start, you know, in terms of how, you know, they're getting tarnished left, right, and center, and have been for quite a few years. I think that vertical integration has not been good for a lot of different reasons, but that's the primary one that we're seeing, the erosion of news gathering and, you know, credibility. Mm-hmm. In the kind of films that are getting made on the big level, obviously, are things that will only sell on the foreign, you know, to a foreign audience as well. So that gets kind of diluted. But and on the second part of it, though, I mean, if you're passionate about something and you obviously have started your own company in a very crowded market, and, you know, there's ups and downs with that, but I think if you've got a good idea, there's always room for it. You know, if you've got the drive, you know, I mean, there's always barriers, regardless if you started 30 years ago or today. I mean, they're just different today than they were then.
Mm-hmm.
But if you got the drive, the passion, and you're young enough, you know, there's still opportunity. But yeah, I'm not a big fan of how we can, you know, the media companies all became like two or three now. I mean, it's,
you must, you know, with that a lot. I mean, with
well, we all do. I mean, you know, I mean, you now, when you're trying to make a television deal or a film deal, you know, I mean, it's much more difficult to. You almost become an employee, you know. They're always trying to drive you to do just for work for fees, and rather than, you know, have a good stake ownership. I mean, owner, you know, we own SCTV, and that was in an environment in the 70s and 80s when you could kind of really do that still, you know. And there was a lot of production companies in television, like Norman Lear's company and, you know, Bill Cosby and a few others had, you know, fairly substantial entities that would be much harder to do today.
Yeah, definitely. Do you have any advice for, say, because I know you guys have, I'm from Wisconsin, well, I'm from Chicago originally, but
mm-hmm.
went to school in Wisconsin, and Chris Farley is actually one of my best friend's cousins.
Oh, really?
And so, yeah, I knew Chris kind of through the years and how he got involved. And can you say anything about when you get a guy in, kind of like a Farley or somebody like that, who just comes to the, when you know you got somebody right away? Because let me get this straight as far as Second City goes. Anyone is allowed to take classes, correct?
That's right. Now.
And then you start, pulling your cast from those initial people, right?
That's right.
And then eventually the final group is the creme de la creme of those people.
That's right. Pretty well, you know, it's like sort of working in the minor leagues, and you work your way up, and that's exactly how it works. You know, this just, and you know, Chris took classes and took classes with Dell, and you know, got into a touring company, and then got into a main stage, and went to Saturday Night Live.
But it was pretty quick for somebody like him, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's certain people that stand out. You know, Chris happened to be one of those unique individuals that, you know, you could not avoid Chris Farley. I mean, he was had a certain charisma and energy that I'm sure if you knew him, you knew that. Yeah. And it was pretty self-evident when he got on stage.
So you guys still do offer that to anybody. How do you, I mean, you must get tons of...
Well, we actually have in Chicago alone, you know, 1,300 students at any given time taking classes. So, you know, they're generally an 8-week tenure. And then, you know, so in the whole system, there's probably 2,500 students per week taking classes between here and L.A., New York, Toronto.
And then you'll have guest performers come in as well with the resident staff you already have working with you?
You mean the cast member?
I mean, as in teaching and lecturing and workshops and stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, sure, definitely. Yeah, you know, we had Alan Arkin in, and yeah, definitely people come in, and Tina Fey, and we'll come in and do guest classes. Yeah, that's generally we try and do that at least a couple times a year.
Because I've definitely been thinking about doing that myself. I'm mainly a musician, but I started doing comedy. Like, it just became part of a stage act. My name's Kurt Stein. We have this band called Bert Klein Jazz Vampire and the Orchestra of the Undead. And we do pop music from everything from, like, turn-of-the-century stuff, like Polly Wally Doodle, to everything that's on the radio now. And then I found Dick Cheese kind of stole my act. But we're a little more, how do I put it, more Tenacious D meets Tenacious D meets Tony Clifton, kind of.
Okay.
But, yeah, I've been definitely interested in, I'm moving back to Chicago, and I've been looking for some stuff to occupy my time.
I just went to your website. You're under construction now.
We're rebuilding it. We're actually entering a partnership with this company called La Luda.
Okay.
LaLuda.org. La Luda is a new media collective that does independent film, independent publishing, and we're entering into a partnership together, and they're handling all of NYU's and the Nation magazine's media stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then we're kind of being the vocal point of La Luda, and we have tons of CD releases, and we're getting into film now, and that's the thing I really wanted to start experimenting with. Our main goal is now to get a comedy musical group together, which I don't think it's... There's a lot of musicians who are really funny guys, and you never get to see... that's why, Tenacious D was a great example of something like that, you know?
Yeah. Did you do Sketchfest here or anything like that?
No, we haven't. We've done mostly stuff around Wisconsin. I've done a few things out in New York, but I haven't. We haven't done anything down there yet. And I wanted to, you know, do some tryouts and see what happens. I've had some pretty good. I'm a pretty good writer and a pretty decent actor and a musician. So
Wisconsin must have something in the air or the water, because I guess you go back to Kentucky Fried Chicken, which started out of Wisconsin, right? And then, if you recall that.
Oh yeah,
that group, those guys, and then the Onion.
Yep, the Onion, definitely.
So, you know, there's something. You know, I've always, when I drive through Wisconsin, where you can drive by a firecracker store and a porno store on the throughway. You know, that says something. Plus, you got a major serial killer. That wasn't it, Richard? What, Quinn?
We had Dahmer, and we had.
Oh yeah, yeah. So you know,
and
you,
we had Ed Gein.
You got all the, you know, all the right chemistry for comedy.
Excellent. Well, I was wondering if, are you based out of Chicago?
Yeah, I live here. Uh-huh.
If I could send you a package of some of our stuff to...
Sure, more than happy to, yeah.
Should I just address it to you at Second City?
Yep, Second City, 1616 North Wells.
Okay.
Chicago, 60614.
And when do your classes run?
You know, there's 3 hours. Every day. You can have them during the afternoon, the evening. You know, weekends. Most people do them on the weekends.
Awesome, awesome. Well, yeah, I'm definitely gonna. I'd like to. I'll get a good video of the Burt stuff together too, maybe, and send you some of that. It's pretty interesting. But
okay.
Man, I really appreciate your time, and I'll definitely send you off a package of our stuff. Please let me know what you think.
Terrific.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much. Okay. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Andrew Alexander.
Boy, I did.
I know you did. He's the founder of Second City, and all the great people that Saturday Night Live and Second City have worked with, a lot of them came through his doors, and learned a little bit about the industry, although some of this stuff might be old, because, again, this is from January of 2005. I think the knowledge still rings true.
Still quite relevant.
Always. Some stuff that isn't relevant anymore, though. Let's talk about some of the failed things. We like to talk about our failures in here. Again, this podcast...
I was a little curious about that.
Yeah, this podcast is supposed to be about, arts, entertainment, the creative process, the creative mind, getting your ideas out there to the world, trying to sell them, things like that. Here's some things that fell through with Fever Pitch that I mentioned. Okay, we were going to partner with the company La Luta and have a film division, and that was all going to work out real well, and we were going to kind of be the voice, the figurehead, exposed media part of La Luta, and that never happened. They fell through. We fell through. So
No big deal. Nobody watches movies anymore.
No big deal there.
Go on.
Chris Farley, my friend Rat, is cousins with Chris Farley, has a Grandma Farley. However, I don't know Chris Farley, and if Andrew Alexander thought that that's how the way I went with that, I let him believe it, but I didn't really mean it that way.
All right, a disgusting lie.
It's a disgusting lie, but again, my friend Rat has a Grandma Farley. Chris Farley's grandma also.
Yes.
Okay, just so you know. What else? Comedy Troupe stuff, that never got its off the ground, but it's still a work in progress. I think we're doing stuff with that, right?
Absolutely. Well, the deal is that just not everybody we know is all that funny.
Yeah, so we're trying to find funnier friends.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Maybe some funnier friends could get a hold of you somehow.
Yeah, get a hold of me, because as I mentioned at the beginning, nobody emailed me ever, so we didn't know people were listening. But if you want to email us, yell at us, suggest new people to interview, anything. Tell us you like the record label. Tell us you don't like the record label. Tell us what to do differently. But try to say something nice, too.
Don't be a dick.
Email me at Kurt, K-U-R-T, at Fever Pitch Fever. Whoa, I almost did the Fever Pitch address.
You're living in the past, my friend.
I'm living in the past. That's not happening. Email me at Kurt at 100pocketsrecords.com.
Is that 100?
That is 100 spelled out.
All right.
100pocketsrecords.com. Kurt, K-U-R-T, at 100pocketsrecords.com. Also visit our website. 100pocketsrecords.com. We have some very exciting things coming up in the next year. Some really exciting releases from people like Lazy Talkers, Christina Corton, Josh Meese, Christopher Hoffman, and somebody you're going to listen to now. This is Ari Chersky's record. Ari is a guitar player and a composer who lives in New York. Originally from the West Coast. His album is called Scenes from the Zephyr. And the track we're going to play you is Not All Cowboys Wear Hats. And any fans of Spaghetti Westerns, Ennio Morricone, Mark Ribot, Brill Frizzell will really dig this kind of thing. So we hope you like it and check it out. The record will drop in December. So please let us know what you think of it. The next podcast we're going to be releasing is a very special one to me. One of the greatest guys in the rap game ever, the one and only Kool Keith, interviewed as the Reverend Tom from his group The Undertakers he had for a really short period of time, but it's a really interesting interview. And recently, Keith's talking about quitting the rap game. I've seen in some interviews, and I don't like to hear that. I love you, Keith, and... You are the Sun Ra or George Clinton of rap, and sunrise to jazz, what George Clinton is to funk, what Kool Keith is to hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it works. But we hope you like listening, and please let us know you're listening, because we promise to do many, many more of these. I'm Kurt Stein.
I'm Luke.
James Lorbecki for the 100 Pockets podcast. Thanks for listening. Hope you learned something. Laters.